Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Time for the Future Files with futurist Richard Watson. Now tonight we're going to look into the crystal ball of science and technology, and this is the kind of fun stuff where we get to hear what kind of gadgets and inventions we may well be playing with in the years to come. Richard Watson, welcome.
Good evening.
As normal, I'll give you a few trends to unpack, and then a few predictions to unpack as well. The predictions are kind of, well, sometimes they're a little bit of an exercise in creative thinking, but other times you actually say, well, they're not too far away. So let's explore those tonight. Robotics and artificial intelligence. Just where are we up to with that these days? What are we doing that we, you know, never would have dreamt we would have been doing this time, you know, 10 years ago?
Well, I suppose robotics has been sort of a standard part of science fiction for quite a long time, and we've had sort of basic robots for quite a bit. We've even got them in our own homes now. We've got the sort of the one that cuts the lawn rather badly with solar power. We've got one that sort of picks up dust off the floor rather badly again. But I think we are on the cusp of robots becoming really quite common. I think to begin with, we won't see them. I mean, they're going to be sort of military applications, or they'll be doing dangerous jobs, you know, underground, underwater, and so on and so forth. But I think they will slowly make their way into our homes. But I think if you're expecting a sort of 6-foot shiny android, you're going to be hugely disappointed for at least the next 50 years. But I think, and I think the reason for this partly is the convergence of a number of technologies, and certain parts or ingredients of the robots, if you like, are really becoming quite cheap now. I mean, sort of cameras, voice recognition technology, you know, processing capacity, all of that kind of stuff is dropping in price. So, you know, what was impossible or very expensive 10, 20 years ago is now becoming increasingly easy. In terms of artificial intelligence, this is something else that I think we've been talking about for a very, very long time. I suppose it depends what you mean by artificial intelligence. If you mean something that is as smart as us across every single category, we're nowhere near that, and I doubt whether that will ever happen. But obviously we've had artificial intelligence in some areas for a very long time. We had the IBM computer Big Blue that beat Kasparov at chess many years ago, so they're obviously better at any human, living human at the time at chess. And, you know, we have things that are, in a sense, artificial intelligence. I mean, if you type something incorrectly into Google, it will ask you if you mean something else, spelling it rightly. That is a form of AI at a very basic level. We've got speech recognition, which is really quite an extraordinary thing when you think about it. You can get a taxi to show up without actually speaking to anybody, and they know where you are, and you can give instructions and all of that kind of stuff. But we are, I think, a very, very long time where, you know, we have a situation where I can be on the phone to someone or something and not know whether it's a real person or a computer at the other end of the phone. That's quite a way off yet, I think.
But you're suggesting that maybe some machines very soon could well be able to judge the emotional state of those of us who use them?
There are some people playing around with this. Toyota, in Japan in particular, are trying to work out the emotional state of the driver of one of their cars so that they can adjust the car accordingly. I mean, for example, if you are highly stressed, you could cause an accident, so they're trying to find ways of finding if you are stressed and then calm you down.
Now,
how do you do that? Well, it's actually quite easy. I mean, first of all, what are you doing in terms of your driving? Are you weaving all over the place? That might be an indicator, and the car can obviously pick up on that. How hard are you holding the steering wheel? Are you shouting inside the car? And the car could respond by capping acceleration, capping speed, putting on some mood-altering music, perhaps, I don't know. And computers can do the same thing, and people like Microsoft are looking at trying to work out what mood the user of a computer is in a similar vein.
Okay, the other idea that we have actually seen a little bit of, but you think that we could well see a lot more of it, is devices that actually reprogram themselves as they actually learn more, learning computers, really.
Yeah, we're seeing that. I mean, some of the devices I use are starting to sort of, in a very basic level, sort of work out what I'm actually after.
Yes.
This sort of links slightly into the semantic web. And I mean, at the moment, if you buy a mobile phone, you've kind of got to put everything in it yourself. It's pretty dumb. But I think in due course, machines will actually start to understand, what we're looking for. They might, you know, start making friendly reminders. I mean, again, you've slightly got this. If you have an online diary or calendar, you can get, once you've set program it, you can get reminders about things. But I suppose what I'm talking about is the fact they work out things for themselves.
Mm.
And you may have to opt out, you know, but you don't have to put all of this data in yourself.
Mm. Well, even the last couple of versions of Windows will often actually give you suggestions as to, is this what you're trying to do? Are you trying to do this? Would you like me to help you do this? I guess that's in some ways going in that direction. We're going to see more of that happening.
Absolutely. I mean, a spell check would be a very simple example of that.
Yes, yeah. Now, radio frequency identification tags, where do you think we might start be using those? basically they're just used to track things.
Yeah, they're kind of the new barcodes, if you like. And again, this is something that's been talked about for ages, and they don't quite seem to be taken off yet, but I think we're getting very close to them being quite mainstream. This is essentially a tiny little sort of transmitter receiver, I think particularly a transmitter, that broadcasts the location of certain items to people who want to know. So they would classically be used on a large box full of razors or something coming into a supermarket warehouse, and the supermarket could work out what they are, where they need to go, and all that kind of stuff. And people are really worried about this because they think, you know, if they walk out of a supermarket with the barcode still on, and there's a lot of products. I mean, I bought a book recently. It's got an RFID tag in the back. It's broadcasting whereabouts, which is not quite correct, but you know, there is a little element of that that's true.
What are they doing that for your book for?
Well, again, it's a logistics stock control thing, and it kind of morphs into the whole area of biometric passports as well. I think my passport's got an RFID tag in it as well, and it broadcasts where I am, and it's got various bits of information. Obviously, the concern here is could people hack into it and steal my identity?
Yeah. How do you feel about the fact that, though, you know, with your passport, it's probably sitting in your top drawer right now as we speak, though, but the fact is that people know where you are.
I'm afraid there's nothing I can do about it. I just, you know, get over it. I don't like it, but there's not very much I can do about it. I need a passport.
Fascinating. Open House is what you're listening to. Richard Watson, futurist, is with us. We're talking about some of the things on the horizon for science and technology. 1-300-40-20-20 if you've got some thoughts to throw into the mix. Some predictions now. I bought a new laptop recently, and it gave me some face recognition software so that only I can get into its files, and that's pretty mainstream. You're talking about face recognition doors.
Exactly. I don't think the technology would be terribly difficult. I'm sure it exists somewhere already, actually. Mm. You know, I think keys, to some extent, will sort of disappear eventually, and we'll get in either because we've got some chip in our phone or our arm, or, you know, or we just sort of press our hand against it, or it'll just recognize us. And I think in very high security facilities, sort of iris recognition and all or various forms of biometric security are linked into entrances. So it'll take quite a long time to actually, you know, come down to a sort of house in St Kilda, but I think it could potentially come there eventually.
You joked there about, you know, a chip in your arm. Where are ideas like that up to these days?
I think the last time I looked, there are about 200 people in the world with chips in their arm. One of them belonged to the guy that puts chips into pets. And, you know, I mean, it's easy to do. I think there's an issue with people being happy about it, and also the thought of actually having it physically placed and possibly having it taken out when it goes wrong, which I'm sure it will. Mm. But in theory, it could be very practical. I mean, you could contain all of your medical records, and if you get knocked over and you're unconscious and you've got no ID on you, you could get scanned by the ambulance guy, and they know all about you.
And they also know where you live and where you are right now, and they can also shut down your bank account if they don't want you to buy or purchase things.
Well, I mean, we are walking around with a load of this stuff already. I mean, if you're walking around with a phone switched on, there's a ton of information coming out of it. You know, credit cards and all Google searches. I mean, you know, if you make a Google search at midnight after a couple of beers, you know, that doesn't delete itself. That stays on some server somewhere.
Yeah. Fully sensory internet is also something you're predicting.
Yeah, that's kind of around a little bit at the moment. In Japan, you can buy aroma pods that download smells off the internet, although I would imagine the smells are pretty tacky. you can buy gaming vests that have compressed air pockets, and when you get shot in a video game, you can actually sort of feel, not exactly pain, but you'll certainly feel something. You can put on haptic gloves where you can actually sort of touch things in virtual worlds that don't actually exist. So, you know, I think if you add all of this together and you put, you know, you start putting on a helmet and glasses and you have 3D screens and all the rest of it, and you know, possibly pop a couple of pills, possibly illegally, it gets quite immersive, it gets quite realistic.
It can get a bit scary too, doesn't it, some of these predictions that you're throwing our way?
Possibly. I mean, it could be very useful. I mean, if you go shopping online, you could actually, you know, smell the goods, touch the goods and all the rest of it, and it give you some indication of what they're like. Although we're miles away from that being desperately workable. I think at the moment it'd be very, very clunky indeed. But yeah, it is a little bit scary potentially, but it's amazing what we get used to over the years.
Hmm. Shape-shifting materials, they're not just the stuff of mythology. You think they might be around the corner as well?
Yeah, I think there's a sort of, you know, we could have baths that recognize who you are and would change their shape according to, you know, who's getting in them, much in the way that, you know, seats in very expensive cars recognize, you know, which of four drivers you are, and they will actually adjust the legroom to suit your particular profile. And also the area of sort of nanomaterials and all the rest of it, we could have, you know, plastic bridges where the bridge has different characteristics every sort of single millimeter. So there's some quite interesting developments happening in materials.
Well, it's enough to give you dreams or nightmares, depending on which way you take this information. It's always good to talk to you.
Thanks very much indeed.
Thanks, Richard. Richard Watson from nowandnext.com.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.